totally tremendous touchdown?
Or will Quentin Springer and the Warriors run away with an upset victory?
OMG!
Tune in to CFRC 101.9 FM to find out. We'll be live at 12:45 with the Grad Club pregame show ahead of the scheduled 1 p.m. kickoff.
Quilt is a literary publication for and by undergraduate students here at Queen's. We are open for submissions of creative and academic writing for our upcoming themed volume, Abundance. All subjects and styles are welcome, so long as they align with our theme, and we welcome creative and wide interpretation of that theme. Submissions should be short, sweet, and, as always, brilliant. To learn more, to read our past volumes, and to submit, head to our Instagram at QUQuilt. We can't wait to read your work. Love, Quilt.
My name is Jean Legault, Science 82, former CFRC alumnus, jazz director from 1980 to 1982. I'm thrilled to be back on campus. I can't describe how important CFRC was to me, not only as a training ground. It helped me develop my confidence in public speaking. And as far as my love of music, it was developed directly from this station. The wealth of records back then, we didn't even have CDs, and the people, the terrific volunteers that were here. I want to thank CFRC, and I'm really pleased, and I'm amazed at the technology that's here, and I'm wishing you all the best of success. This is Jean Legault for CFRC 101.9 FM.
Good morning, it is 11 a.m. on Friday, September 19th, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and this is Kingston Currents. CFRC's news programming is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. In today's episode, we'll be talking about some exciting news from the Kingston School of Art, some updates directly from City Council, and the world's second largest geoengineered carbon removal initiative, putting Eastern Ontario on the map in the fight against climate change. After being in limbo since February, the Kingston School of Art has announced that they officially have a new home. KSOA made the difficult decision to move from their location of 31 years at the corner of Princess Street and Victoria Street earlier this year. But later this month, KSOA will be joining Providence Village. Located at 1200 Princess Street, the charitable organization brings together diverse community partners to offer services to people across the region. Some of the partners that call the village home include Girls Inc. Limestone, the Heart Center, Providence Care, the Alzheimer's Society, and Independent Living Center Kingston. This new chapter for KSOA will include a dedicated printmaking studio with professional presses, flexible multi-purpose classrooms for arts programming, increased accessibility, and collaboration with the village's vibrant community of nonprofits. KSOA's treasurer and longtime board member, Rob Hosier, sat down with CFRC to chat about the upcoming move.
Last time we chatted with KSOA, things were quite up in the air. I was wondering if you could just give us the full story of how this partnership with Providence Village came to be and how we ended up here where you're ready to move in at the end of September.
Oh my gosh, Providence Village was perfect. It's just that perfect timing that you never get in working with nonprofit organizations. It seems like we're always scrambling, but really we loved our old location. That's like a fact. We had an amazing landlord. We had an amazing location, but you know there's a few drawbacks to it in a sense as well. We had limited accessibility and we had limited parking. And as a lot of nonprofits over the pandemic, you start reassessing where your resources go and things like that. And so we were kind of going through a change where we were re-scoping how we served our community and making sure that we weren't duplicating services and going through an internal kind of assessment. In that assessment, we determined that this nice big space, which I'm sure is going to be utilized for something incredible afterwards, isn't necessarily suiting our needs for what we need to provide for the community. And so we looked and looked and looked and looked and looked, and then Providence Village comes to us and says, hey, you know, we've got space in our organization, our village, that may suit KSOA. And they came to us in the purest sense of community. They're looking for community partners to be in a little community to serve the bigger community, which it's like layers of community. And so when when that proposition came to the table, we were like, it's a no-brainer at this point. It's an incredible opportunity. It increases our accessibility, increases our parking, increases our space, increases everything that we can do to equitably provide arts to their community without breaking the bank.
Absolutely. And you kind of dove into this a bit there, but it sounds like this new space is adding a lot for KSOA. I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about this location.
There's a major issue, and there's so much potential, and so it's an amazing opportunity. So what we're excited about is, like, number one, what I said is that we're entering into an existing community that already has people that already are populating the village with community facing services and different organizations, that even that alone could keep us busy for the next 5 or 6 years, if not more. But on top of that, just the resources and the connections and the accessibility and just the opportunity to increase our footprint at Providence Village. The outdoors around Providence Village is just incredible, the outdoor space. And so when we start considering reinstating summer camps and spring break camps and, you know, art camps, plein air painting events and things like that, things like we can take art to the outdoors, we're unparalleled for space in that. So, you know, it's literally that thing where we have so much opportunity, and they've been so amazing to work with and providing us opportunities, providing us ideas on how we can engage with their community and the existing community at large. It's been amazing.
That's awesome. And this is kind of jumping around a bit, but it just came to mind. Last time I spoke with Christiane, everything was really up in the air. They didn't know where all the supplies were going. I was wondering, where has everything been in the meantime? Did folks take
it home? In a large storage unit. We actually slimmed down. We had 31 years in that last location. So as you can understand, being a volunteer-led organization, things start to collect after a while, and maybe not in the best ways and things. So we had a massive clean out. Our team and our board and a few other folks came, and we spent literally weeks going through all of our old art, you know, salvaging what we could salvage, and then literally selling everything that we didn't need at the time. And so we focused on the education system and teachers that need supplies for their classrooms and such. And then it got to the point where it's just like, come in, grab what you need and go, just making sure that we were not wasting those particular resources. But from then on in, we have these massive printing presses because we have printmakers. We're literally one of the only ones. I don't know as far as region goes, but we're at least the only ones in the region with full printmaking equipment and things. So you have these massive printmaking pieces of equipment and things like that. They've all been in storage for now while we custom fit up our space in Providence Village. And so we have a few spaces in Providence Village that we're going to do some core printmaking and things like that, but also open up the other classroom, open up some other classrooms for some art programming. But all that stuff has been in storage. We're literally moving that stuff in later on this month because we had to accommodate for these big, massive printmaking machines, and Providence Village has been amazing with us trying to get these things in there. But yeah, it's literally in storage, going back in, and now we're organizing the space to provide a core printmaking studio and then start setting up our classrooms. So that exciting work happens this end of this month, I believe. And so we can have hopefully some courses going up in fall.
Awesome. And what's kind of the energy of your team right now? You guys are all kind of getting ready to move and slowly ramp up programming. How's it going?
We did some strategic planning not too long ago. We're so excited, but A little bit exhausted. So if we're a volunteer run board, there's less than 10 of us that are doing this. And so on our ksoa.info, if you'd like to volunteer or help or support or anything like that, just shoot us a line there. We'd appreciate the help. But we are so excited. We definitely are in such a state of transition right now. And so we're trying to also, you know, put our mission and what we want to accomplish in our community really, really, you know, forward and really focus on that, in the sense that we are now downsizing and we're now have the opportunity to really change our model up quite severely. So we've been throwing around ideas like shared spaces models, where we go into the community with like a kit of the things that we could do within that classroom space, or that church basement, or that, you know, Rideau Heights Community Center, or Boys and Girls Club, or whatever the case may be. And so there's a lot of possibility right now. But we're really trying to start and get a firm foothold with the printmakers, and then the on-premises studios to start up a few classes as kind of our bedrock, and then start being creative from there on in.
Once again, that was Rob Hosier, board member with the Kingston School of Art, on their upcoming move to their new home at Providence Village later this month. A Kingston area minerals mine is putting southeastern Ontario on the map in the fight against climate change. Canadian wollastonite, located in Seelies Bay, has signed a three-year agreement with UK-based company Undue Carbon to supply nearly 500,000 tons of rock for one of the largest carbon removal projects in the world. I spoke with Canadian wollastonite president Bob Vasily about the science, the scale, and what this means for Kingston and beyond. Wollastonite is a mineral not many people have heard of, but according to Vasily, it could play a huge role in tackling carbon emissions, while also helping Ontario's farmers.
We supply wollastonite, which is a primary mineral, and most people don't know what it is, but it's a calcium silicate. We supply it into a number of industrial applications, into steel manufacturing, into some green cements. We've been working a lot as a soil amendment, but recently we've done a fair bit of research, which is very compelling now, as a soil amendment for farms, which has the main benefit of capturing atmospheric carbon and bringing it down and locking it away. But it also has agronomical value to the farmer. So it encourages farmers to participate in this carbon removal cycle, which is important to everybody.
The cycle is an accelerated version of what the Earth has already done for billions of years, enhanced rock weathering.
The process is a natural process. The Earth has been doing this for billions of years. It's always taking place. And so the process of rain picking up carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, reacting with silicate rocks, and those silicate rocks permanently locking that carbon away, is how the Earth has regulated itself since it cooled, originally cooled. The process here, we're accelerating it. It's called enhanced rock weathering because we're crushing those silicate rocks down to a fairly small particle size, and that increases the reactive surface area. And then we're putting it into field conditions, which again really promote the breakdown and the weathering of these materials. So instead of a process that takes thousands of years, we're quite literally accelerating it to taking 1, 2, and 3 years for this weathering process. It's relatively new in that the real emphasis of how important the need is to capture carbon that's already in the atmosphere and bring it back out really has developed. There's all kinds of technical solutions for it. This really started to take off. We started working in 2015 on it with the University of Guelph. It really, really started for us to take off in 2020 with a number of publications with some of our other university partners, Yale University being maybe one of the biggest ones. And it's catching on because it's a real practical, simple solution. It involves farmers. It involves large swaths of land. It's sustainable in that it's helping the crops also weather, survive biotic, abiotic stresses a lot better, which is what, climate change is doing to farms. So this, the crops are managing the stress better because of the silicon that's releasing. It's employing farmers and farmland, which otherwise wouldn't be involved. And it's also reducing the amount of other inputs, like chemical inputs and things like that, into these farmlands. So it's just a natural win. It's far less costly than technical solutions. So there are some other large projects, billion-dollar projects to capture carbon that removes CO2 directly from the air and pumps it into, concentrates it and pumps it into rock formations deep under the earth. There's some ocean methods, but this is by far the simplest, most cost-effective, with the greatest all-around good for society and for the planet.
Canadian Wollastonite has been working with universities since 2015 to study the process, but in recent years, it's caught the attention of international partners. Vasily explains how Undo Carbon got involved and how this new project will be scaling up their carbon removal operations.
We first started working with Undo in early 2023, and they had reached out to us with some, and we had reached out to them on some publications and some work we were doing with University of Guelph and Yale University and so on carbon removal. They were very interested. They were working with the mineral called basalt mainly, which is very prevalent. We demonstrated that the wollastonite actually, it's almost an order of magnitude, 10 times faster in its weathering and its reactivity. And since they were trying to develop some geochemical models to prove and to demonstrate the actual carbon sequestration that's occurring, that was very attractive to them. So we started off with a pilot project of about, I think, 5,000 tons of material. It went really well. They put it into some farm field applications as well as some trial plots. They were getting strong signals. They were getting good signals in terms of weathering and rates, which they weren't getting, it was taking years to get in other minerals. So they wanted to scale that up. We agreed. So we scaled it up in 2024. And we spread a total of, I think, 35,000 tons of material on farm fields. That was a real success, both with them and their science team, but also with a number of companies that were sponsoring them to help develop the science, the enhanced rock weathering science. This contract is a real, fairly significant extension. This contract is for 450,000 tons over a three-year period. So it's, as you can sort of see, 535, 450. It's a scaling, and it's really important because this is going to demonstrate for them and also for the world, because this would be, we believe this is the second largest demonstration of its kind for permanent carbon capture in the world, and it happens to be happening here in Kingston and in Eastern Ontario. But this is going to demonstrate the scalability of the science. And once this is completed, one of Undo's plans is then to start incorporating other mineral sources, other rock types like basalts and olivines and so on, into their models, and then going around and essentially get operations like us involved with carbon removal on a global scale in every country in the world. So they pitched that in a competition, a next prize competition, which was a global $100 million prize competition. And they came in fourth in the world out of, and I think if I recall, the original was 3,200 teams, universities, companies from around the world. So this humble project in Eastern Ontario is now getting some world recognition. And this particular offtake is really important. I think it's going to really set the pace for large-scale carbon removal going forward.
For farmers, wollastonite is provided free of charge and the mineral improves soil quality. This project will allow the program to add an additional 2,000 farms to the program.
We're providing the wollastonite at no cost to the farmer. That's being subsidized through the program and through the main purchasers who are trying to advance the science. So that's Microsoft and Google and Stripe and some of these other, very large companies. The farmer's receiving the wollastonite at no cost. They're spreading, we're covering the cost of spreading or physically spreading it for them. And there's all kinds of agronomical benefits that the wollastonite's bringing to the crops that they're seeing right away. The farmers just simply continue the farming operations as they normally would. So normally farmers would bring in lime and put lime on fields in order to manage the pH so that they, you know, for their crops and for their fertilizers. By using wollastonite, first of all, putting lime on farmlands, particularly in our area, gives off CO2. So that removes their emissions. And now they're capturing, you know, more than 50% weight of CO2 through this process. So it's really surprisingly simple. It's allowing them to decrease their inputs. So they don't have to, for instance, buy lime. And so there's cost to the lime and cost to spreading. So it's directly saving the farmer, which is symbiotic, because without the farmer's land, we wouldn't be able to do this. So it has to be a win-win for both the farmer and you know, the large corporations that are sponsoring this. And so that's essentially the model and how we see it rolling forward going into the future.
The city of Kingston was the first municipality to step in, subsidizing hauling costs for farmers. And Vasily says it's already sparking interest in other municipalities.
So Kingston is subsidizing haulage rates for farmers, because that's the only cost to the farmer. So they're helping the farmer integrate wollastonite into their operations. It's the first program of its type that we think of in Canada, like a municipal contribution to, you know, carbon removal at this scale, like a private carbon removal. It's significant because it's drawing adoption, a lot of adoption from the Kingston farmers. But what it's really doing is it started the conversations now with other municipalities. So we actually have, you know, Ottawa region coming down to talk about the exact same program. We have Association of Municipalities in Eastern Ontario starting to talk about this as a way for them to promote and meet their own sort of carbon objectives, carbon removal or carbon sequestration targets.
Vasily shared some of the key objectives over the next 3 years.
So certainly achieving the objectives of spreading 450,000 tons. A farandu demonstrating the measured objectives of capturing, you know, plus 200,000 tons of atmospheric carbon permanently. And so if I can give you an equivalent of that, if you were to think of trees, like planting trees, which is, people think of that in terms of carbon removal, that's the equivalent of us planting 6 million trees in the next 3 years. So it's a huge amount. The big difference, and I don't like to use trees too often, because the tree will capture carbon for the life of the tree. And then when it dies, the carbon is re-released. So this would be like planting 6 million trees of carbon capture, but the tree never dies. It lives forever. And so this is essentially what's taking place with the type of carbon capture that the farmers are participating in.
The global scientific community is also taking notice. Last spring, Undo was named one of four global winners of the $100 million XPRIZE carbon removal competition for its work in Eastern Ontario. Vasily says this project could become a blueprint worldwide.
After this trial, or basically this project, I think Undo will have the data they need to be able to model other mineral sources, which otherwise, like, it might take them 10 years normally. They'll get those geochemical models to complete it in the next 2 to 3. And then they'll be able to accurately measure carbon removal through silicate or enhanced rock weathering. And I know their goal is to then, you know, find thousands of companies like mine and get them involved so that it becomes a truly scalable global solution.
Once again, that was Canadian Wollastonite President Bob Vasily speaking about a landmark carbon removal initiative incoming for southeastern Ontario. Before we dive into more local news, I'm going to turn to our weather and traffic report for today featuring CFRC's Jesse Bell.
This is Jesse Bell with the Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. We begin with Monday, September 15th, daytime high of 23 degrees with largely sunny conditions here in the city of Kingston, dropping down to 12 overnight. Tuesday, September 16th, daytime high of 25 with a mix of sun and cloud, dropping down to 12 overnight once more. Wednesday, September 17th, a little cooler with a high of 23, but with all the beautiful sunshine, it's going to feel closer to 26, and it will be a little warmer overnight with a overnight low of just 15 degrees. Thursday, September 18th, daytime high of 24, another beautiful sunny day. Friday, September 19th, 20 in the day, but it is dropping down to sub double digits, 8 degrees overnight. Moving into the weekend, Saturday, September 20th, daytime high of 16 with an overnight low of 8, sunny conditions. And Sunday, September 21st, daytime high of 17 with a lot of cloud coverage, dropping down to an overnight low of 9. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. We will focus on road closures. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess 2 Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Berry Street, Queen 2 Colborne, closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Earl Street, Collingwood 2 Toronto, closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Johnson Street at Victoria, closed September 15th to 26th for sewer separation and road rehabilitation. Kings Court Avenue, concession to First, is closed until October 10th for a gas main installation. Lincoln Drive at Bay Ridge is closed until September 19th for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Montreal Street at Railway and Rideau is closed September 18th at 11 p.m. to the following morning at 6 a.m. to accommodate a paving operation. Princess Street at Taylor Kidd and John Counter is closed September 17th at 11 p.m. to the next morning at 6 a.m. to accommodate a paving operation. And Sydenham Street, Princess 2 Queen, is closed until October 24th for the Sydenham Street Community Space. Victoria Street, Union 2 Johnson, is also closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work.
Thank you, Jesse. Now back to more local news. NAV Canada has broken ground on the country's first ever digital air traffic facility right here in Kingston. This temporary site will serve as the foundation for next-generation air navigation technologies before a permanent digital hub is established in the city. David Shepherd, NAV Canada's Vice President and Chief Technology Officer, explained in an interview with CFRC how Kingston's new facility will transform the current air traffic control model.
Yeah, it's very different in terms of the nature around how the services are going to be provided forward. Today, we have staff that work actually physically at a location in a physical building looking at windows. Tomorrow, with this technology, the introduction of this technology, we'll be bringing in state-of-the-art cameras, equipment that will and high-speed networks that will bring in video feeds and simulate the out-the-window view onto a screen that can be independent of the location of where the service is provided from. And the technology that's available actually also includes significant improvements from what's available from out the human eye. So things like digital overlays, or you can see surveillance, automatic detection tracking, that all improves the safety environment for our employees and for the aviation community.
So why Kingston? Shepherd says a combination of factors made the city an ideal fit.
We ended up looking across the country to determine where we thought would make most sense to start trialing this technology and our first digital hub as well. And we ended up narrowing in within a region of a number of different cities. And Kingston was looked at for a number of different factors on three categories, work, live, and play. And it really was looking at it from an employee's perspective around the quality of life, not just at the work environment, but for their family and for themselves in terms of the city that they're living in. And so Kingston came out amongst the top within the region that we were looking for. In addition, it's got proximity to Ottawa, which is an important element, particularly for this first site, for our technical teams to go there and our operational teams to go there to trial the technology, but also the regulator, which is Transport Canada, to be part of the process as well and be able to hop in a car and go down to Kingston and see the technology as it's evolving to ensure that they're confident in the solution and the capabilities as well.
Mm-hmm. And you kind of got into it a bit there, but what does this mean for the city and our residents? What kind of opportunities will this bring?
So there's a number of opportunities that are going to pop up. One is they're just trialing the technology. So there is investment that's going in to Kingston even right now with this announcement. You'll see we're starting a fairly significant construction project to build out and expand the existing tower that's at the Kingston Airport to accommodate this digital facility. It also will mean a number of different jobs that will move into Kingston as well in terms of providing our traffic services. We've also just relocated a couple of technologists as well that will be there. So these are great jobs, and it's a great city, and so it would be a significant amount of opportunity for the city of Kingston.
The Kingston site is part of NAV Canada's broader Digital Aerodrome Air Traffic Services Initiative, joining a global shift already underway in 16 other countries.
Yes, so we end up looking across the globe, really, to see who is doing what in air traffic control services using these digital facilities. And there's a number of really interesting models that are out there. One is in London City, where they end up remoting in a very busy airport into Swanwick, so it's the southern part of the UK. And the other one was in Norway, where there was a digital hub concept that we end up seeing, which was where we think the future is, where it's not just about moving single airports. It's looking at this much more holistically as an organization around how we can move multiple airports into a single location so that we can provide more staffing flexibility. We can concentrate sort of the technology investments in the future as well. And so looking at those models, we ended up mirroring ours off of the Norway model.
The permanent hub in Kingston is expected to be up and running in the early 2030s and will eventually host remote services for up to 20 airports.
Yeah, it's all dependent on how the technology evolves and getting through a number of stages of approvals for ourselves to make sure we're confident that the safety case behind it, the technology is functioning, and our operational staff are able to use it appropriately, and making sure our regulator with Transport Canada is also confident in the capabilities that we've demonstrated along the way. So there's a number of gates that we're moving along. But the more permanent solution is we're looking in the early 2030s for us working towards that. But we're starting with Kingston at the Kingston Airport. And then we'll be adding one additional airport to trial out the remote capabilities within the next few years associated with that. And then after that, that's where we start building up the digital hub and scaling that up.
For now, Kingston will lead the way in testing Canada's aviation future. After delaying the decision in winter 2024, at their last meeting, Council decided not to increase the reduction target for corporate greenhouse gas emissions from 30% to 40 to 50% by 2030. The initial delay was a disappointing outcome for many environmental advocates who appeared before Council and advocated for a more ambitious target. However, the extra time gave staff an opportunity to gather more information and evaluate the feasibility of the goal. The information gathered ultimately led to the decision not to move forward with the target increase. Nathan Mannion of Greenscale, the consultant who compiled a report about the city's emission reduction efforts, noted a 30% reduction is already no small feat.
30% is the most optimistic target. It's not the most realistic, it's the most optimistic target.
Another key challenge Mannion mentioned was that many key changes being made now will take time to implement and have impact, with only 5 years to reach the goal.
This window of reaching that 30% by 2030 is extremely narrow. We have a two-year window. Most of these reductions still have to happen, yet they take 5 to 7 years to establish this infrastructure, but we only have 5 years left. The math of the timelines doesn't add up.
Kingston's emissions are separated into corporate, meaning city-owned and operated facilities and transit, and community, encompassing all other emissions. Corporate emissions make up 2% of the city's total output.
When we're looking at that corporate footprint, we have to remember the corporate footprint is supporting the larger community. It's not just its own individual silo. So as we look at overall Kingston's overall emissions in 2024, The corporate was only 2% of that overall footprint. The community is 98%. So even if we were to eliminate the corporate by 100% by 2030, we're still going to be left with most of the footprint of Kingston's greenhouse gas emissions. So corporate reductions alone are not going to be enough to reach the target. We have to work in tandem as a group.
The city has been taking steps to reduce what it can control through its vehicle fleet and facilities. The city has been focusing on making existing processes more efficient. But according to Russell Horn, the city's leader in energy and asset management, there are limits to what can be achieved through maximizing efficiency.
So to date, facilities have been primarily focused on efficiency and reducing energy use, although we cannot reach net zero through efficiency alone.
While the city is looking to replace infrastructure as it ends its life cycle with more environmentally friendly options, like replacing old buses with electric buses, this process will take time and money. According to the presentation by staff, 30% by 2030 will already cost the city $26.3 million, and the price tag only increases with more ambitious goals. Ultimately, council voted 12-1 to keep the target at 30%, with Councillor Jeff McLaren being the sole vote opposed. At their last meeting, council voted unanimously to launch a visioning process for three major city properties, the Memorial Center, Center 70, and the Portsmouth Olympic Harbor. This move was motivated by the controversial proposal earlier this year to build a 4,000-seat soccer stadium at the Memorial Center site. That idea faced strong opposition from the Kingston and District Agricultural Society, who organized the fall fair at the location, the Memorial Center Farmers Market, and residents of the neighborhood. The heated situation raised wider questions about how to safeguard the future of these public spaces. These sites are currently home to a wide range of uses, from Queen's University hockey to weekly farmers markets. With many of these spaces' lifespans coming to an end, some big decisions have already been made, like the decommissioning of Center 70 as an arena. Councillor Wendy Steven noted the weight of the changes coming to all these facilities.
I just want to acknowledge that decommissioning Center 70 really is the end of an era. A lot of memories were made there by a lot of different people over the years, and in particular, back before amalgamation, right, when this was Kingston Township. It holds a lot of emotional energy for a lot of people. I think that while, you know, there will be some people who are disappointed by this recommendation, I do think that decommissioning this facility is the right thing to do. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what comes out of community consultation for this new opportunity. So I'm hoping that not just Lakeside District, but, you know, members of the community from across the city do participate and we get the best ideas coming forward.
Commissioner of Community Services Jennifer Campbell explained what the city hopes to achieve with the visioning exercise.
I really think we're approaching this visioning exercise as an opportunity to really think about how these spaces and places want to be used by our community. What are the opportunities that we could align different services, operation models, et cetera, as opposed to a construction exercise where we're really only talking about the build plan, the design concept on the whole. So we're advancing a design in the Memorial Center, which is being fed by criteria and visioning. But we want at the M Center to come out with an actionable plan that will let us get costing and all of that. The visioning exercises are more about what are the operations, what are the opportunities on those locations that council can then endorse for us to allow us direction to move forward on confirming costing and next steps. I think what the public will expect to see are open community calls to meetings and opportunities to talk about uses, what's happening within those neighborhoods or in the local use of those spaces. And then there would also be specific stakeholder engagement with those who currently have tenancy or using the sites to help to feed into those uses. And then there's the broader connection to other needs within our community through either net new involvement in the visioning process or referencing past consultation.
Councillor Brandon Tozzo capped off the discussion.
I'm envisioning this as a success.
City staff will now begin consultations with updates expected later this year. Before we dive into some events coming up this weekend, we're going to run through some headlines directly from the city of Kingston this week. A new public artwork has been installed at the Robert Bruce Memorial Parking Garage on Bagot Street between Brock Street and Princess Street. The artwork, titled Kingston in Motion, was created by local artist Abby Gowland and stretches across the 10 exterior panels of the garage. Through digital illustrations printed on panels, the artwork features stylized figures that reflect the daily rhythms of the area and nearby transit hub, adding vibrancy to a place where people pause, pass through, and gather.
Gallen explained, "This commission marks a significant milestone in my career as an emerging artist as my first large-scale city-funded mural. The project has been both formative and rewarding, providing the opportunity to expand my digital practice, work on an ambitious scale, and contribute meaningfully to Kingston's public art landscape." Kingston in Motion was selected following a two-stage application process. 41 applicants responded to an open call for expression of interest and a selection panel of local professional artists, arts workers, and creative professionals shortlisted for local artists, who were invited to submit detailed proposals. After a public engagement period in the summer where the public was invited to comment on the shortlisted proposals, Kingston in Motion was selected. Megan Surrett, Manager of Events and Programs, Arts and Culture Services, states, quote, "We are thrilled to unveil this new public artwork by Abby Gowland, which is a celebration of recognition and belonging and a site-specific mural that responds to its surroundings and helps to transform everyday moments into something special. This public art project was funded by the city's Parking Operations, Licensing and Enforcement Department as part of the city's public art program, which is managed by the Arts and Culture Services Department. You can learn more about the Robert Bruce Memorial Parking Garage Public Art Program on the city's website, and be sure to check out the work for yourself on Bagot Street. In another message directly from the city, Kingston welcomes 8 new family physicians. As part of the city's ongoing family physician recruitment program, 8 new family physicians are being welcomed to the community. This continued momentum in the city's recruitment efforts brings the number of physicians recruited this year to 12, and 33 in total since the launch of the physician recruitment program in fall of 2022. Mayor Brian Patterson states, quote, "I'm incredibly proud to welcome these 8 new physicians to our community. Their arrival represents a significant step forward in ensuring more residents have access to the care they need. This success is a testament to the strength of our recruitment partnerships and the growing appeal for our city as a place to live, work, and build a career in healthcare." The incoming group of physicians includes 4 net new physicians expanding access to care for residents who do not have a family doctor, and 4 replacement physicians, ensuring continued care in the community for patients who are currently rostered with a family doctor. 3 of the physicians are international recruits and 2 are from outside the province, reflecting Kingston's growing reputation as a destination for medical professionals. 3 physicians have committed to family practice since graduating from Queen's University and completing a locum, short-term temporary coverage of physician duties in Kingston. As the city continues to grow, the physician recruitment program plays a vital role in ensuring residents have timely access to quality care. The program focuses on attracting new talent and achieving long-term retention by helping partners and families integrate into the community through the Nurturing Employees and Supporting Transitions program. Residents without a family doctor are encouraged to register with Healthcare Connect, a provincial program that helps track primary care provider capacity and connect people to one. Kingston City Council has invested over $3 million into the Family Physician Recruitment Program since 2022. You can learn more about the program on the city's Family Physician Recruitment page. In a final message from the city, annual brush and leaf pickup season begins in Kingston. Plan your fall yard work around the city's brush and leaf collection. This year, brush collection will begin on September 22nd and leaf collection starts on October 27th. View the collection schedule at cityofkingston.ca/collection. You can also sign up for collection reminders at the same time. Sometimes you may see them collecting ahead of schedule. Don't panic. They're just trying to get a jump on the season. They'll be back in your neighborhood during your scheduled week. For brush, be sure to have your brush piled loosely at curbside by 8 a.m. on the Monday of your collection week. Same goes for leaf collection week. Once again, for more details, be sure to visit cityofkingston.ca/collection. Before we wrap up this morning, we're going to run through your Friday forecast, a roundup of just some of the events Kingston has to offer this weekend. Be sure to drop by the Black Dog Tavern this weekend as they celebrate 25 years. Original chef Derek McGregor returns with a special menu featuring classic favorites from his time at the restaurant. The regular menu will also be available. Celebrations kick off today at 3 p.m. Kingston Writers Fest 2025 is in full swing, with home base being at the Kingston Marriott all weekend. Join for a festival that inspires action, creativity, and meaningful conversations throughout the downtown core. On Saturday, you can head to Springer Market Square for the Kingston Public Market, featuring vendors selling fresh local produce, cut flowers, plants, baked goods, preserves, local crafts, and so much more. The market will be open from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Also tomorrow on Saturday, September 20th, Draw the Line, a parade for people, peace, and the planet. Groups across the country are uniting for Indigenous rights, migrant rights, economic justice, climate justice, and peace. This nationwide mobilization coincides with the opening of Parliament. You can join the Kingston chapter gathering at Victoria Park at 1:30, then parading to McBurney Park. Questions about this event can be directed to Kingston at seniorsforclimateactionnow.org. At the end of the parade awaits the Skeleton Park Neighborhood Yard Sale and Block Party, a day full of secondhand treasures, music, and community fun. This is a first-time event hosted by the Skeleton Park Arts Festival, running from 12 to 6 p.m. You can check out the event listing on kingstonlive.ca to learn more. On Sunday, September 21st, Yoga in the Park is on from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. in Battery Park. Enjoy a free outdoor yoga session led by downtown instructors. Just bring your mat and stretch out the stress. Also on Sunday, be sure to drop by downtown for the Intercultural Arts Festival, a celebration of our multicultural community through live dance, music, performances, cultural pavilions, artisan and craft vendors, and international cuisine. The festival runs from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Confederation Park in Springer Market Square. The festival features 30 live performances and over 50 community booths and vendors. The event is free to attend and everyone is welcome. That is all things current in Kingston for this week. Thank you for listening to CFRC's local news programming, brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. To listen on the go and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office and supported by our friends at Modern City Taxi, we're pleased to present a selection from Hylia's new EP, The Piano Sessions, which was recorded with just one microphone and a grand piano. Local artist Hylia reimagines a collection of covers in her own unique style in this new release, and unlike her earlier recordings, the new release is stripped down and raw, capturing the intimacy and authenticity of her live solo performances. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream The Piano Sessions by Hylia on your favorite platforms and enjoy a selection from it called Gold Dust Woman right now here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office and supported by our friends at Modern City Taxi, we're pleased to present Sweat, a new single by local electronic artist Kakao that represents an evolution in his sound. Heavy, hard-hitting electronic dance music, looking toward the future of space and sound expressed in a high-energy, funk-tastic journey. The new song takes listeners to the forefront of the top tier of Kingston music. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visitkingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Sweat by Kakao on your favorite platforms and enjoy it with us right now here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
We'll be right back. Step into a world where stories meet sound. My name is Simar Kaur, host of Melodies of Myth, a show that blends Indian classical and Western music with short tales of culture, history, and identity. Join me every Friday at 3 p.m. only on CFRC. And if you enjoy the music, you can find more by searching Simar Kaur on Spotify. Tune in, unwind, and let the melodies carry you. Once again, it's Melodies of Myth, 3 p.m. every Fridays.
Sick and tired of feeling sick and tired? Don't know where to go for help? We know how that feels, and we found help in Narcotics Anonymous. We have 7 days a week in Kingston. We do recover. You get more information on our website at www.limestonena.com or our Facebook page, Limestone Area of Narcotics Anonymous, or call the regional hotline 888-811-3887 for more information or to find a meeting.
Hey, I'm Alec, and this is
Molly, and you're listening to CFRC.
Gotta say her.